Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Opening up trade with China, a disaster for American workers. So says a new report. OSHA getting tough with red states on worker safety. And today on the show, our segment from Working Class Perspectives, Striking in America, and the latest from the United Steelworkers. Welcome to the Friday, October 22nd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora. And in the past week and a half, we just added another platform, Stitcher. A lot of ways you can access this show. John Russo, visiting scholar of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and Working Poor out of Georgetown University, and the former coordinator of the Labor Studies Program and co-director of the Center for Working Class Studies out of Youngstown State. This is going to be our first guest today. Been on the show many, many years. And what we're going to talk about is the ongoing strikes in America. And when you count them all up, 180-plus strikes have been recorded this year, and over 24,000 workers have walked off the job this month alone. And the month ain't even over yet. Really good post on Yahoo Finance that I picked up yesterday, and it reads as follows. As employers of all sizes grapple with an acute worker shortage, amid what's being called the pandemic era's great resignation, it is becoming increasingly clear that people with jobs aren't happy. At an ever-lengthening list of workplaces around the country, workers this year have been getting loud about the state of wages, working hours, and conditions. From healthcare to entertainment, 100,000 U.S. workers are either striking or preparing to strike in a bid to improve working conditions. New data signals that worker unrest is growing like it hasn't grown for a long time. Comment here from Johnny Callis, PhD student at Cornell University School of Industrial and Labor Relations. He says, we've noticed a bit of an uptick in late September into early October. We've already documented 39 strikes just in the month of October. Those numbers are already the largest of any month this year. So what's going on? What's going on? Well, in a nutshell, workers are just tired. This pandemic has changed everything, especially when they are called heroes and essential workers, and they're making crappy wages with lousy benefits. Got a comment here from Dan Osborne. Dan is the local 50G president of the Bakers Union in Omaha, Nebraska. He says, you know what? They're trying to take away our cost of living. And then they try to cut, you know, pension benefits. So John Russo is an expert on all of this. And he goes back to the 70s when there was a lot of labor unrest at the Lordstown plant when they were making, remember the Chevette and the Vega? Oh, yeah. Those were cars that were manufactured in Lordstown. So getting back to our first guest, which is John Russo, John is going to talk about what's going on in America today. And he brings a historical perspective to all this. And I say that because John, for over 30 years, was at Youngstown State University. And during that time, in the early years, Lordstown fired up. That was the Lordstown GM plant that produced the Chevy Vega. Remember the Chevy Vega? Small car. Fuel-efficient car, and a lot of people bought it because gas prices were starting to go up. But there was a lot of labor unrest at that plant. So we're going to compare and contrast what happened before. And during that time, when you take a look at the 70s, compare to today, we don't have that many unions. However, the polling indicates people would love to join a union right now. 60 million of them would like to do it if there weren't so many roadblocks. Now, with that being said, Maria Soma will be joining us on behalf of the United Steelworkers. Maria is the organizing director. She's going to talk about this resurgence of worker power. And she put it bluntly, unions, including the steelworkers, have seen a resurgence in interest for unionization from workers in industries across the board, especially among white-collar workers. COVID-19 has opened up the eyes and a lot of folks to learn about the existence of unions and their rights to organize. We're seeing this resurgence in understanding that collective bargaining is essential for workers' protection and is the only legal tool that workers have. That being said, the faculty at the University of Pittsburgh overwhelmingly voted in favor of joining the United Steelworkers. The final vote count, which was tallied on Tuesday by the Pennsylvania Labor Relations Board, found that 1,511 faculty members voted to join the union, while 612 voted against. The successful organizing effort, which includes more than 3,000 tenured professors and part-time faculty, may portend a wave of unionization at Pitt, which, by the way, is the city's oldest university. It's happening. It's happening. So Maria Soma, organizing director of the Steelworkers, our second guest. The World Trade Organization is examining China's trade policies this week as that country marks its 20th anniversary of membership. Listen to this. Opening up trade with China has been disastrous for American workers, and we've got research to prove it. According to a report from the Economic Policy Institute, at least 3.7 million U.S. jobs were lost between 2001 and 2018. Why? Because of growing trade deficits between the United States and China. Roughly three-fourths of those lost jobs in manufacturing. And wages took a big hit as directly impacted workers saw their wages decrease by $37 billion per year between 2001 and 2011. This has prompted a comment from Scott Paul. Scott's been on the show many, many times. He is president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. This is what he said. China has done very well for itself as a member of the WTO. However, it came at the expense of millions of American workers who lost their jobs, lost wages, and fell out of the middle class. And while China is a member of the WTO, it's never played by the rules, and the WTO has been loath to do anything about it. He goes on to say, it's good to see the Biden administration plans to use this opportunity to pressure China to do better, but I continue to be skeptical that the WTO has the ability to do anything about China's blatant disregard for global trading rules. Without major reform, I doubt anything will change. Boy, that is sad to hear. Lastly, in the meantime, said Scott Paul, the Biden team should pursue strong trade enforcement action to stand up for American workers and businesses while working with our allies to keep the pressure on. It's time, yes, to build back better. And when it comes to China, the next 20 years cannot be like the last 20. Can you believe that? 3.7 million U.S. jobs lost. And that's not even the entire 20-year period. That's 17 years, 2001 to 2018. Think about how many people are working for so much less money today because they lost their job, especially in manufacturing. Officials with the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, better known as OSHA, have threatened to revoke approval of the state occupational safety plans in three GOP-controlled states, South Carolina, Arizona, and Utah, thereby asserting federal jurisdiction over workplace safety within those states. This move comes in response to the states having missed the deadline to implement the Biden administration's emergency regulations for healthcare facilities, which were designed to protect healthcare workers from COVID-19 by requiring personal protective equipment, certain safety measures, and paid sick time. Now, under federal law, states may administer their own workplace safety plans so long as they are at least as protective of workers with federal regulations. Now, 22 states have enacted their own OSHA plans, and though these state plans must comply with federal regulations, their enforcement tends to be much weaker. OSHA officials announced that if these three states fail to come into compliance with federal standards, federal inspectors could take over enforcement of workplace safety regulations within them. That is huge, huge, and it's prompted a response from our friends at the National Council on Occupational Safety and Health. Jessica Martinez is co-director. In fact, we had that organization on the show on Monday of this week. Great organization, NCOSH. And the statement reads as follows. OSHA's doing the right thing. They're on firm ground by taking these steps to enforce life-saving protections for healthcare workers. Jessica said healthcare workers have been the true heroes in our pandemic. Every healthcare worker, no matter where they live, deserves the best possible science-based protections to reduce the deadly risk of COVID-19. She went on to say our federal safety laws are clear. States have the option of enforcing safety regulations, but only if they are at least as effective as nationwide regulations. Peter Dooley, he's another individual from NCOSH who's been on the show. He is the Safety and Health Project Coordinator for National COSH. He said Arizona is a repeat offender. And when it comes to failing to safeguard workers, this is not the first time the state has failed to properly enforce our safety laws. The Arizona Industrial Commission, he said, has previously been cited for improperly reducing fines for safety violations by employers and for failing to properly enforce protections for workers at risk of falling when working at height on construction sites and other workplaces. Dooley went on to say, we can't have a race to the bottom where states compete by trying to see who can do the least for workers. That's why we have federal standards. A new nationwide emergency temporary standard, which will require vaccines or weekly COVID-19 testing in all private sector workplaces with over 100 employees, was announced by President Biden in September and is presently under review by the Office of Management and Budget. These things take time. But, yeah, hats off to OSHA and to NCOSH. Standing up for workers. That's what it's all about. All right, we have to break. John Russo, our segment with working class perspectives coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to our live line right now. Welcome back to the show. John Russo is the visiting scholar at the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor out of Georgetown University. Longtime contributor to America's Workforce. For many years, he was co-director of the Center for Working Class Studies out of Youngstown State. And he's here to talk about what's going on in America. Strikes by union members and non-union members. And there's a lot of non-union members that want to be in the union. Hey, John Russo, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Very good, Flash. Good to hear from you.
So we're seeing the giant walkout, and there's a lot of people just leaving their jobs altogether. I think in the month of August alone, 4.3 million people said, I'm done. I'm leaving this job. John, you've been following labor for many, many years. I'd like to get your perspective of what's going on in America today.
It's complicated. Because complicated because of what's going on in terms of the past pandemic and its impact on working people. It's also the frustration of years of lower pay and poor working conditions and people saying either in unions or non-union situations, I don't have to take this anymore. I'm going to make a fight. You're absolutely right. What's gotten most of the attention last month and early part of this month has been the, I would call the non-union strikes. That is, people are just not going back to work. I mean, the jobs report said there are 5 million jobs still down from February of 2020. And so there's a really genuine reduction in supply. People are not going back to work, and they don't want to go back to work. And they especially see it in leisure and hospitality sector, which continues to be down at almost 10%. You see it in healthcare, employment fell because people are getting burned out. And the continued job risk and patients and then dealing with the anti-vax people. And there, many of them are quitting because of vaccination requirements or poor pay in nursing homes and other healthcare professions. And there are other people that we know are technically employed, but absent due to illness, unquote. Then you go down to women, including women, who are still taking care of kids And that's another problem. And people don't want to go back to the office. So the physical presence of work itself is still worrisome to some. So in many ways, the pandemic may have downgraded work as the centerpiece of people's identity. They prefer to be home, a different sort of lifestyle. And you can sort of keep going on down the list, and you can see it in that what you said, the jobs report and the what's called the JOLTS report, which is about job openings and labor turnover surveys that came out last month. And you get a situation where people are not going back to work or don't want to go back to work. And my view of that, apart from the facts, is that America has always been a very rich country, but didn't treat its workers very well. In fact, some cases, remarkably badly.
Mm-hmm.
So wages are low, adjusted for inflation. The typical male worker these days is making no more in 2019 than his counterpart did 40 years earlier. They're longer hours. We're what some people call a no-vacation nation. And we're offering less time off. Work is unstable. It's high turnover rate. The term we've talked about on the show before, churning, that goes out in the workforce. So that type of unpredictability, fluctuations in working hours, wreak havoc on family life and all parts of life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a strike going on. One of them it can be seen in people not returning to work. And then, of course, the economists want to call that a labor supply issue. They don't want to talk about the real reasons for this. And then you got people that are in unions who are tired of the same things that many of the non-union workers are. And they're saying, I'm not going to do this anymore, and I'm going to go on strike. And so right now, I think the numbers I remember is 34 strikes currently going on. They're pretty high profile right now, especially the John Deere strike that's going on, nurses strikes down in Alabama. There is a good deal, or excuse me, coal miners down in Alabama and nurses out in California and Oregon. And we just had recently the negotiations and actually a contract, although it hasn't been approved yet, those in the screen actors and technical employees in the media in the movie industry in California. So there's a lot of strikes going on, and people are frustrated. But it does raise the question, Flash, what are unions going to do about it?
Yeah.
Both organized labor doesn't seem to know quite what to do. And I remember I did an interview last week with the Wall Street Journal, a reporter, and we tried to talk about that. People are not easily organized these days because of the law. Many unions, because of that, don't want to spend a lot of money on organizing per se, and other than sort of low-hanging fruit. But here you got a lot of people that are, in essence, striking in one way or another. And it's a time when we should see labor unions out there really doubling down on labor organizing. I put that squarely on the back of the labor law itself in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking for a report that's going to come out, I think it's next week, and it's called the White House Task Force on Worker Organizing and Empowerment. And the question of it is, what's going to happen? What are they going to say as a result? They've had a lot of the labor leaders in and talk to them, and they've talked to a lot of economists and other folks. And what can they do given the sort of stalemates that we see in the legislature, both in the Senate and the House? I think what you're going to see, and this is a guess, is that President Biden knows that the largest employer in the United States is the government.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he's going to try to lead by example and try to establish some government policies that may be translated to the private sector. He's certainly going to overturn a lot of Trump's policies. Just a typical one is walk-around rights for OSHA investigators or something as simple as that. But they're also going to try to provide some energy to union organizing. How that's going to look, I don't know yet. But that's all on the horizon. But he could make some decisions around insourcing that might help facilitate union organizing. He could make some discussions about temps, especially in unionized settings. He's going to have to make some this report has to address the uneven wages and benefits, increasing workers in underserved areas like farm work, domestic work, all with the purpose slash of increasing union density.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are all things we have to hope happen, but given the state of the Senate and the House, and it's not very good, let's just put it like that, in terms of the Build Back America plan and the infrastructure bill.
Yeah, I know they're trying to incorporate some of the PRO Act legislation, Protect the Right to Organize, in that Build Back Better program. But boy, that thing is stalled so much right now. It's unfortunate.
Exactly right.
Yeah. John, I got to take a quick break. John Russo joining us on our live line. John is a visiting scholar at the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor. And just go to workingclassstudies.wordpress.com. There's a lot of good material there. We'll continue the conversation with John. And John was talking about organizing. Well, guess what? Maria Soma is the organizing director for the United Steelworkers. We'll get her point of view on all of this. She'll be on later in the show. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we are available on a number of platforms, actually six now. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and most recently, Stitcher.
lot of different ways you can access this show, America's Workforce. And when you get a chance, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We always appreciate a 5-star rating. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin John Russo. This is our segment we do each and every month. Various guests, working class perspectives, we call it. John's the former coordinator of the Labor Studies Program and co-director of the Center for Working Class Studies out of Youngstown State University. You know, I was talking earlier in the show about Lordstown. So Lordstown actually started in the mid-60s, and they went on strike, what was it, 72? Was that the year they went on strike, the workers there?
That's right.
Yeah. Now, what was it that you told me? Because we had a pretty rowdy bunch of workers there, and I want to compare what happened back in the 70s. There were a lot of strikes, I know, back in the 70s, and I know you chronicled many of them. But you had a lot of workers there that just got back from Vietnam, right?
Yeah, there were many people who were hired in that were younger and had been from the area of Ohio, eastern Ohio, western Pennsylvania, and even West Virginia. A lot of them were the sons and daughters of unionized workers that had worked in those areas. But they don't really. Importantly, many of them had been to Vietnam, and this was a generational fight. They weren't going to live with the types of boredom and overbearing management. You know, 100 cars an hour were going down the assembly line at any particular time. The recovery time was 5 seconds, and you're doing a job every 35 seconds. So it was pretty brutal, mm-hmm. And they reacted against that. And when I was interviewing people, and I asked them, weren't you scared? And they said no. And one particular one said, you know, Doc, what was I going to be scared of? Management? I had 500,000 Viet Cong trying to kill me. I wasn't going to be scared of management. And so there was a type of attitude. Look it, I've been through stuff before that's much more difficult than a strike.
Yeah.
And they were militant, and it became a cause celeb. You know, 60 Minutes did a program. There were all sorts of discussions about the blue-collar blues, you know. But it was really about the nature of the job and what was happening, and people were saying, I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, Flash, many ways, that's what's happening right now. We got a lot of people, regardless of whether they're in the union or not, and saying, I'm not going to take it anymore. You know, they're exiting. Mm-hmm. And today it's frontline workers, not a war, but people on the front line and essential people that are very upset with their lives and what's happened in this post-pandemic era. So I think that it's there are parallels to what people were saying back in the 1970s in Lordstown, and then at the same time, it is different.
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah.
It's in a non-union setting. I mean, it's happening in unions because we have all these strikes right now, but the bigger one that people are really worried about is just in general, people not wanting to go back to work.
John, let's talk about wages, and I'm reading some numbers here. Now, some companies have really boosted wages. I know Amazon, for one, which their warehouses are brutal to work in, and I believe they're raising their wages up to $18 an hour. But overall, the stats, well, they're not that encouraging. Average earnings, I'm reading, rose 19 cents an hour in September and are up more than a dollar an hour, or 4.6% over the last year. Now, keep in mind, for many, many years, you were lucky to get 1.5%, maybe 2%. So my question to you, how far do we have to raise wages in order to get people? And there's more to it. There's obviously health care. You got employers that want workers to pay more for health care. They're cutting pensions. I'm wondering where do they have to go to make the workers happy today? What's your opinion on that?
I don't know. I'm just saying that right now because the obviously have to increase wages and benefits for the short term.
Yeah.
And they have to get people to go back to jobs that are not very great, including cleaning rooms and making other sorts of adaptations to the current labor supply problem. But at the same time, employers are using this period to ditch support staff. Okay?
Yeah.
Downsize. They're using more technology to replace and move into automation.
Right.
And with fewer inventories and current small workforces working at an really unsustainable pace and the growth of independent contractors, employers are going to react very differently in the longer term as opposed to simply increasing workers' pay. When I go by Wendy's or other, you know, fast food places that are looking for work, and they say $300 signing bonus, big deal. Workers have been so far behind in terms of wages and benefits. And as unions gotten weaker, it has not only affected union workforces, what's called the wage pool, something we've talked on the show before, has not been very strong. And they are far behind. So one of them, a member of the media calls me and says, well, there aren't wages going up. I'm sorry. I ask him, how much are your wages going up as a journalist? And how sustainable is it?
Yeah.
And, of course, they say, well, it's not going up. Of course they're not. I said, a lot of these people that are in these crappy jobs that are going to be asked to go back to work for $300 are not going to go back to work. And even those settings where work is going on and employers are willing to pay more, we're going to see how sustainable that is for people working. Like you said it best, Flash, you know, you go to these Amazon warehouses, and the work is unstable. People are making good money, but they're working their tails off in ways that say, I don't have to live like this. And that's one of the things that we've heard during the pandemic. People not going back to work saying, I don't have to live like this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So with unstable work, especially among low-wage workers and non-white workers in particular, that are particularly subject to unpredictable fluctuations in working hours, all these things can wreak havoc on family life. They're saying, maybe I won't go back to work.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very complicated period of time, and you're going to see the struggle between those who say, all right, we got to get rid of all these benefits and force people back to work, use a popular phrase that I developed. Economic blackmail, and or, all right, we're going to move to really better and more sustainable jobs, share the work better and more widely than we have before. It's a very fluid period of time in terms of working America.
Boy, you're not kidding. John, I'm going to leave it on that note. I knew I would get a lot out of you. John Russo, visiting scholar of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and Working Poor, which is based out of Georgetown University, spent the bulk of his life out of Youngstown as co-director of the Center for Working Class Studies. He's also professor emeritus at Youngstown State. You keep doing what you're doing, workingclassstudies.wordpress.com. There's a lot of good pieces there, so do read those and share them, if you will. John, you take care. We'll talk to you down the road, okay?
Thanks a lot.
All right, we're going to take a break. Maria Soma is the organizing director on behalf of the United Steelworkers, and she is coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And you can check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. I just love saying that. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. And welcome back to the show. She hasn't been on for a while. Her name is Maria Soma. And Maria is the organizing director for the United Steelworkers. Proud sponsor of America's Workforce, USW. .org. I love their website. There's a lot of good videos, shows workers all around what they're doing, what they're saying, and some of them on strike, some of them locked out. And today, Maria is going to talk about organizing. Hey, Maria, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
And congratulations are in order. I was reading earlier in the show about the University of Pittsburgh's 3,300 faculty members looking forward to bargaining their first union contract with the school administration, and they will become members of the steelworkers. And I'll tell you, let's start right there, because you take steelworkers, what are they doing on campus? And I know you represent, I think it's, what is it, like 50,000 nurses around America? Isn't that right?
50,000 healthcare workers.
Healthcare workers. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, talk to me about this organizing drive. I understand it was a long time coming. That's what some of the professors are saying.
It was a long time coming, because I think an employer is an employer is an employer, whether they are U.S. Steel or the University of Pittsburgh. And so there was a hard-fought battle for this campaign. These university faculty members had been trying to organize since the 1970s, had three separate drives with some other unions in the past, and decided to take a chance with us about 5-6 years ago. We'd been talking to academic workers in the Pittsburgh area for a while. It all really started. It was very interesting. And I'm going to go off just for a second, because Duquesne University was our first foray in the United States. We already have about 8,000 or 9,000 academic workers in Canada, and with our union up there. We represent the University of Toronto, and so just huge numbers up there. But here, we didn't have any higher education members. And so Duquesne University faculty members came to me, goodness, years ago, at least I think 8 years ago, and said, we want to be represented. We want to unionize. And I said, we're not the union for you. We don't do academic contracts, you know. And I sent them off to some other unions. And they came back and they said, no, we've talked to the other unions. We really want the United Steelworkers. I sent them away one more time and said, really think about this. And when they came back again, I said, they said to us, in this region of the country, to be a steelworker is not only the history of this region, but also where we think there's a power base. And so that's what we're looking for, is to unionize with the union who wants to work with workers. And so what we said was, we're an industrial union, is what we told them. We think unions and the workers are stronger together, united under one umbrella. We're not a cross union. So if you believe in industrial unionism, which means all workers, single employer, back in the day when steel mills were hot and heavy in this region, right, that was our belief, and that made us different than other craft unions. And they really bought into it. And so they were adjunct professors who were at Duquesne University. Now, we won that election by a landslide victory. However, Duquesne fought us and union busted and claimed religious exemption and won. We took it all the way to the courts and to the circuits, and they won. Even though we won the election, the university won the battle of religious exemption. So we were unable to bring them underneath the umbrella of the United Steelworkers. But that was the beginning of our foray into higher education. We've since then taken on the Point Park University adjuncts, Robert Morris University adjuncts, and then in the meanwhile, we were also organizing at the University of Pittsburgh. We lost an election about 2 years ago for the graduate employees through the university's union busting. They had been found guilty. And we just, unfortunately, heard from the Pennsylvania Labor Relations Board about 2 weeks ago that they came back with our final appeal and said that while the university did break the law, they didn't break it enough to close the victory, close the margin for us. And so they did declare that we still lost the election, but only by 5 votes. So you're talking about a bargaining unit of 2,100 people with 5 votes. We've then been organizing the faculty at the same time, and this time it was a decisive victory. We learned from that, decisive victory. And about a month ago, we kicked off publicly our Pitt staff campaign, which is about 7,000 workers, unorganized workers on the Pitt campus. And that's only a description about what makes us a little bit different than other unions, is that we are looking at an industrial model, the entire campus, which is an equal about 11,000-12,000 workers, unorganized workers there, and we're going after all of them. And we won the 3,300 faculty this week. So we're really excited about this. It was a long answer to your question. I apologize, but I wanted to give a brief history.
No, I love it. I love it. You are a vigilant group, and that's what's needed, especially today. You know, I want to talk about that. Maria, as you know, there's a lot of worker unrest. And according to Cornell University, more than 180 strikes have been recorded this year. In fact, 39 strikes in the month of October, and we're not even done with the month. And you know what's going on out there. I'd like to get your perspective on the anxiety and the worker unrest today, and using that as a moment to seize the opportunity. And you're organizing director at the Steelworkers, and I could only assume that, well, this is our time to act, and I want you to respond to that.
It absolutely is our time to act. We have these moments in history where workers understand what they bring and what they contribute to the economy and to our society, the very fabric of our society. I believe we are in one of these moments. The pandemic really pulled back the curtain for workers to see how employers value and see them. And for the workers, for the first time in a long time, again, we have these historic cycles and a long time to understand their value and now to take action on it. So I think we are seeing historic actions workplace, some of it through strikes, some of it through just walking off the job in terms of leaving for other, you know, other better jobs. And employers are waking up and saying that if we want to keep employees, we have to behave better. Now, the challenge to the labor movement is, how do we get the employees to recognize that we are that tool, that they don't have to walk off the job, that there is a path and an avenue to dealing with their employees, using their worker power, and dealing with their employees and trying to fix things at work that they're unsatisfied with. And our objective as the as union organizers is to be that tool. And so we have to step into that mix. And I think that we are. I think that labor movement is taking advantage of what's happening now. We have still a lot of barriers that are in our way. And I'll give you one example. We've got a petition that we filed with JSW Steel in Ohio. And these workers during the pandemic came into work every single day. They have had several folks, you know, with COVID, and they've had to continue to still work day in and day out for JSW. And so we filed a petition about 3 weeks ago with the National Labor Relations Board, withholding about, you know, well over 60% of the workforce. And in the last 3 weeks, we still haven't been able to get an election date yet from the labor board. And they, JSW has brought in 3 union busters. They're sitting there on the ground talking to workers every day, and we're losing support. And workers are being intimidated. They're threatening plant closures. They're doing all sorts of stuff every single day. And so that still exists. While there is a wave of worker action, we still have so many barriers to workers taking that necessary step to unionize. The barriers are in the law. The barriers are in the ability for the employers to keep breaking the law time and time and time again without real repercussions. And so workers are still feeling the brunt end of a bad system. And so we have to have fundamental labor law reform. And so that is just one example of what has happened all over. We had another company that we had over 80% on cards of union supporters. The company came in and they said, we're going to close down the plant tomorrow. They put it in an email. And all the workers bailed and said, we can't do this, we can't risk it. And they wouldn't, they were too scared to even step up and file the charge. We had charges filed, and then they withdrew and said, we just can't even testify, we're too scared. That is also what's happening. So while there's been this huge wave, you still have to think about the barriers and the blocks.
Fear and intimidation. Those are two very, very powerful forces for workers. And that's been going on for many, many years. I'm sure you have plenty of stories. Maria, we just got about a minute and a half left here. You are the organizing director. I'm just wondering, on behalf of the steelworkers, are you beefing that up? I don't know what you have as far as a staff, but where are we right now? Is there a chance for more people joining your team to take care of the moment that we're in right now?
Absolutely. Anybody interested, send your resumes in to the United Steelworkers Organizing Department, 60 Boulevard of the Allies, Pittsburgh, PA. Yes, absolutely. We are always looking for people who want to help grow the labor movement. We are encouraging our members. We believe that workers organize workers best. And so we have trainings all the time for our members to come out and help organize their coworkers in their sectors and their industries. So, yes, we need organizers to keep growing these ranks. Come one, come all.
There you go. United Steelworkers, 850,000 strong. They could always use a few more brothers and sisters, especially in the organizing department. Maria, you're awesome. I love you. Got a lot of fire in your belly. You keep it going. And keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate you. We obviously appreciate the sponsorship on behalf of the steelworkers. For more, just go to usw.org, usw.org. You keep up the fight and keep in touch, okay?
Thanks so much for having me.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, talk about organizing, big labor victory in Columbus, and the latest from the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.